This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, and for the last time before my vacation, I'm the French guy from Switzerland. And joining me tonight is my friend Dave, who is only 1 1 1 0 0 0 1 0 0 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 This is probably the silliest introduction we have had so far.
Doubtless.
Yeah.
Doubtless. But certainly not the silliest we could do.
No. We are very resourceful in the silliness department.
And we have 14 years to go yet. Yes. So, yeah. And if you go to fortnightly, that's 28 years.
Oh, my
God. I mean, just think about that for a moment.
Yeah. No, I'd rather not. No.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm going on vacation at the end of the week. So, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, I should think you are.
Yeah, well, I say going on vacation. I'm not going anywhere, given the current situation. We're going to stay home, go around here in places where no one has gone before, but where no one is, walking in the forest and things like that. And also fixing a few things in the house when my mom is going to take care of my daughter and my dad will help me.
Nice. For you.
Yeah. So I will leave the show in your very capable hands for 2 weeks.
Well, hopefully there'll still be a show there when you get back.
Yes.
I'll do the best I can.
Oh, I'm sure it will be perfect.
Of course.
On this week's episode, we are going to review Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 15, 11001001. We don't have any subject for discussion, but as we have proven with our previous episodes, we don't need any subject of discussion to have a very good episode.
No.
While we are at it, and since we are talking about vacation, friendly reminder that Dave is looking for a co-host for episode 50, so that's not next week, the week after that, in 2 weeks, the 5th of August, I think you said?
That's right, yes.
Or thereabout. So if you want to host with Dave, send us an email, send us a tweet, send us an owl, if you have to.
an owl.
Yeah, get in contact with us. We will give you all the ways to contact us at the end of this episode.
Excellent.
So, I think it's time that we dive right into our review of 11001001.
This is going to be good.
So, in the teaser, the USS Enterprise D is calling at Starbase 74 in orbit around the planet Tarsus 3 for a maintenance check and upgrades. The ship docks, and Captain Picard and Commander Riker go to meet the maintenance crews. The crew's leader, Captain Quinteros, greets them and tells them he was in charge of the team who constructed the Enterprise. Also, with him are the Bynars, two aliens named 10 and 01, who work as a unified pair, neither male nor female. They have recently completed a successful upgrade to the computer aboard the USS Wellington and will be upgrading the computers on the Enterprise as well as making repairs to the holodeck. They seem a little bit annoyed when Picard announces that they only have 48 hours to work, but Quinteros assures the captain that the Bynars are working very fast. I thought it was a nice performance from the actors to only speak half sentences.
That was very good, very impressive, I thought. I'd like to think they did it in a single take, but I would imagine they probably had quite funny moments trying to get that right.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, the first one has to stop in the middle of a sentence, and a second one has to start, you know, the intonation is not the what you usually use at the beginning of a sentence. You have to get straight in. And kudos to them for that.
Oh, totally. I did notice there were a couple of occasions where, further on in the episode, where the second one spoke slightly over the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
In their effort to get it right. But it doesn't matter. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you notice that the Bynars appear quite similar to the Talosians from the cage?
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
Because they kind of had the big heads.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't especially notice that during the episode, but now that you say it, yes.
And also the repairs to the holodeck that they mentioned. I have an interesting story about that, which I'll save for the end of the review. Yeah, it is incredibly relevant that they were making repairs to the holodeck.
Okay. Riker and Picard discuss the Bynar on the way to the bridge. Apparently, over time, they have become so interconnected with the master computer on their home planet that their thought patterns are as close to binary code as possible. What's binaries got to do with that?
I have no idea at all, because binary is not a very efficient method of communication.
Not at all. No, I was like, I don't understand. But okay, why not? I mean, in the turbo lift, the two discuss their plans for the downtime. Picard plans to relax with an old novel and in his quarters, but Riker hasn't decided yet, as he doesn't manage his time off very well. Something will turn up. It always does, he tells the captain.
That particular scene, when Picard said he was going to relax with an old novel, he also referenced something called a personal relaxation light. I don't have a personal relaxation light.
No.
I need a personal relaxation light.
How can you need someone you don't know anything about?
Exactly. What is a personal relaxation light? That could be a personal relaxation. It's not very relaxing, to be fair, but it could be to somebody.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just one of those fancy LED light bulbs, you know, multicolor light bulbs that you can turn to yellow.
Light.
Yeah, a mood light.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
A lava lamp. That's what it is.
Lamp.
That's a lava lamp.
You can't read to a lava lamp, though. That's not very good for your eyes.
No.
Unless you've got a backlit Kindle.
Yeah.
Or other e-reader.
But you can stare at it for hours.
You can. I have.
Yeah, I have too. I'm sure everyone has. I mean, everyone from our generation. I'm sure the young ones don't even know what a lava lamp is.
A lava lamp. Good grief. Yes. I have got one actually upstairs in the house, but the bulb went ages ago and it doesn't work anymore.
Ah.
But I've still got it.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah.
On the bridge, Wesley Crusher is watching the Bynars work. They have been joined by two more of their species to make up for the limited time they have. Picard goes to his ready room and Riker tells Wesley to keep an eye on the Bynars as he doesn't altogether trust them. He then leaves to have a stroll around the ship. Leaving Wesley as the commanding officer or commanding personnel on the bridge. I mean, okay, the ship is docked to a starbase, but still.
But he said those words. He said, Wesley, you have command of the bridge.
You have the bridge, yeah. Yeah.
And Wesley must have been, wow!
But he didn't sit in the chair.
No.
Like Jordy did last week.
Yeah, but like you say, they're in space dock. There's not much point in sitting in the captain's chair when they're in space dock.
Yeah, especially when there's someone's, you know, watching you.
Yes. Talking of someone watching you, the Bynars looked very guilty.
Yeah. We're watching him, you know, from the corner of their eyes. Yeah.
But it's almost like they thought that the two extra ones that had turned up to help them, they wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
Riker's like, Where did these two come from? And they're like, oh, he spotted it.
Yes, because four is more than two.
4 is more than 2.
Yeah.
Or in this case, 100 is more than 10.
Yes.
But they look very shifty. I do not trust them.
Nope. Me neither. I suspected there was something, especially because it's the fourth time I've watched this episode, so.
Yes, so you already knew what was going to happen. But you pretended as though you didn't.
Yes. So it was like, oh my God, what is going on? See, we don't need any discussion subjects because we are not going to make it to the time where we can discuss anything.
Oh, I've got to say, wait till we get to Act 4. Act 4 will probably take up half the episode.
All right. Well, we're still in Act 1. Riker is working the decks. He meets Worf, Natasha Yar, and two other crew members on their way to play a game of Paris's Squares with some of the Starbase maintenance crew. They invite him to join, but he declines. They already have their requisite team of 4, and switching off mid-game disrupts the team's rhythm. Instead, he wishes them luck, but Worf's reply seems too forceful. Yar assures him, though, that Worf is probably joking. He is picking a sense of humor. As they leave, the lights dim in the corridor. Inquiring at a wall interface, Riker learns from the computer that uninhabited sections of the ship are being selectively shut down to free computer resources and facilitate the system upgrade.
Right, because switching the lights off gives you more memory space.
Yeah, that's what I do on my computer. When I run low on disk space, I just switch the lights off.
Turn the brightness down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Perfect sense.
You didn't know that?
No, I do now.
I know why it's not working for you.
Okay.
Because when you dim your light, does it make an awful lot of noise?
Now that you mention it...
That's why. It only works if you're like, makes an awful lot of noise when it gets dimmed.
Ah.
You have the wrong light. Sorry.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe I've been doing it wrong all this time.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, the lights dim off the noise. Okay, why not? I mean... Satisfied with the explanation, Riker next drops in on Data, who, with the help of Geordi LaForge, is exploring his creativity by trying to paint a creative picture in the observation lounge. Riker amusingly tells the two to take notes, as a blind man teaching an android how to paint is bound to be of scientific significance someday. Yeah. That was so funny.
I think that's my quote of the week.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I have two quotes of the week this week. Yeah.
That's breaking the rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we don't have.
No. But, you know, I don't care. I'm not there for the next 2 weeks, so I have to make up for my quote of the week next week and the week after that.
Oh, fair enough.
Riker then visits sickbay, where Dr. Beverly Crusher is getting ready to meet Professor Terence Epstein, the leading mind in cybernetics who had lectured at her medical school. She is highly excited with the chance to meet such an expert, mentioning that since the disaster at Micromius, she has been working on an approach that combines cybernetics and regeneration. She keeps talking about the professor with Riker, even as she heads for the turbolift. Now, when Riker arrives, she turns and she said, "Oh, Commander." But didn't she call him Will? Earlier, I mean, we know it's not really a sequence of episode, but still, it seemed very formal.
Yeah, there's a lot of in this kind of area of the series of this particular season. There does seem to be a lot of inconsistency with how colleagues are referring to each other. Yeah, it's weird.
And she seemed very excited to meet the professor, but I don't know. There was something not right in the way she was playing that. I don't know if maybe she had just an hour on the set because that's the only scene. Oh no, that's not the only scene we see Beverly Crusher. So So I don't know, but there was something something I didn't like in this scene.
It seemed really rushed.
Yeah.
And we never actually meet Dr. Epstein.
No.
Epstein.
No.
Although I read in the notes that there was going to be a scene with him in it, but it never actually made it. So I'm not sure what the relevance of including him in the episode was, why Beverly was so keen to go and see him. But I know that, like we like she said, yeah, he lectured at her her school.
Yeah.
But again, there's just no logic to it.
No.
Unless they didn't have anything for her in this episode and they just put that in there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was not bad. It was just a little bit off. But not bad at all. Finally, Riker approaches Holodeck 4, where two of the binars are working. They tell him the holodeck is repaired, enhanced, and ready for use. So he creates a jazz club, the Bourbon Street Bar, in New Orleans, 1958, with a trombone, a trio accompaniment, and a one-woman audience. He experiments with various looks and hair colors for his female companion until he finally gets what he wants, a brunette who is more alluring and realistic than anything he has ever seen on a holodeck. So, I have a problem with that scene, but it's a recurring thing when people talk to the computer. So he asked for a jazz scene, and then the computer asked for the location. He said Kansas City, and nothing happened. And then he changed his mind, and then it happens. Yep.
Yes.
So that's weird.
Maybe the computer could sense the hesitation.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
And waited for a definitive sounding answer before it acted. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And also, once the doors open and he walked in the jazz club, he started to ask, you know, for those elements for the crowd and so on, without starting his sentences with computer, and still the computer accepted the commands. So yeah, it's always the same. And I'm just picky. It's always the same in every Star Trek series when they talk to the computer. It would probably be boring for the audience that you had to start all your sentences with computer do this, computer do that.
But like you say, how does the computer then know that what is being said is directed at them? Unless, because he's just walked in, he's only just started the holoprogram, that maybe the computer is then sitting there waiting until such a time where, I mean, he's still under the arch at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, maybe. But when you talk to your assistant from that company that starts with a G, or the one that starts with an A, or the the one that starts with an S, you have to say the name before it accepts any command. Even if you just ask something, you still have to say the name again for the next command to be executed.
Unless the assistant then asks you a question that they are expecting a response from you from, then they are listening still. Yes. But yes. On that note, kind of pun intended, how did the computer know what a bone is?
Yeah, that's true.
Because Riker asked for a jazz trio and a bone.
Yeah.
Now, we knew what that meant. He wanted a trombone on the stage. But how did the computer know that's what he meant?
Context? Jazz, 1950s, trio of musicians.
It's possible. I'm willing to accept. No, I'm not. No.
It would have been funny if the computer had materialized like a giant bone.
With or without a dog. Did you notice that when Riker first walked into the holodeck and he was showing his gratitude towards the binars, I think at least twice he called them gentlemen.
Boys.
Yeah. Even after he'd been told that these aren't male nor female.
Yes, I noticed. Riker starts to chat with the woman and learns that her name is Minuet, and that she likes all jazz except Dixieland because you can't dance on it. He then asks her what she's doing here, and she responds she was waiting for him. Minuet starts flirting with Riker, who seemed to fall under her charms. That's my first quote of the week. What's a knockout like you doing in a computer-generating gin joint like this?
Yes, that was good.
Yeah. Also, since when are holo characters aware that they are part of a simulation?
Thank you. That is a question I have for later on. Yeah. And it comes up a number of times. Well, I can't go into too much detail because the relevance becomes more obvious later on. Yeah. But she does seem to be aware of exactly who she is.
Yeah, and I don't really have a problem with that. The problem I have is with him not noticing that it's a real change from previously, and that even though they said that the Biner said that the holodeck had been enhanced and fixed, it should have ring a bell and make him aware that there was something weird.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. I picked up on it myself.
All right, Act 2. On the bridge, Wes asks the Biners how they can process information so fast. They tell him they store information in buffers and save it until they need it. Wesley is amazed at the advantages a society so intermixed with computers can have, but the Biners say that there are also a few disadvantages. Their buffers seem very small for being able to do anything.
Belt boxes they've got with lights on.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Though you could probably fit a cassette in it, but that's about it.
Yes. Yeah.
I noticed that when they were switching between talking amongst themselves in their kind of voice and switching to speaking English to humans, or bridge crew, sorry, mm-hmm. Let's be inclusive here, they flipped a switch on their buffer boxes. So maybe they acted as kind of a translation device as well.
Maybe, or a... they were switching from 4,400 baudes to 250.
from turbo mode to normal mode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah. Picard emerges from the ready room. Upon learning that Riker is on the holodeck, he decides to join him there. In the holodeck, Riker is playing the trombone with a backing group. When he's done, one of the players tell him, "The chick digs you." Yeah, and that's my second quote of the week is there. Riker says, "Maybe it's my music," and the pianist responds, "Well, about that, don't quit your day job."
Yes, that was good. That was good. Nice little bit of humor from the band there.
Yeah, yeah. Riker tells Minuet he has to leave, but she asks him to dance with her, and he accepts. He still can't go over how realistic she is.
Which is more than you can say about the band.
Yes.
The miming was pretty abysmal.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that the cymbal was not even moving when the drummer...
No, and was, when the pianist was playing, he was just like resting his fingers on top of the notes rather than actually pressing them down.
Yeah.
That might have just been a holodeck thing.
Yes, maybe. Minuet asks Riker why his work consumes and enthralls him. He tells her that his posting on this ship, working with his colleagues, is a dream come true. He also asks her how far this relationship can go, how real she is, and she simply responds, "As real as you need me to be." And they start kissing passionately, just when Picard walks in. There was, even stranger, this character, knowing that it's a simulation, knowing that it's on a ship, it has a lot of information that, when you think about it, it's generated by the computer of the ship, so she probably can have this knowledge, but Yeah, I'm still not buying the fact that they didn't question anything.
No, I think this is highly dangerous.
Yeah.
I think the fact that, as I said earlier, because she's aware of her nature and the fact that she is a simulation, if she is able to kind of double back on that and start looking into what's making her real, so to speak, then would that not make the holoprogram fail? I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. It's ringing major alarm bells for me.
Well, I'm gonna. I have something to say about that at the end of the episode. Characters, self-aware holograms.
Yeah.
So when Picard entered the holodeck, he saw Riker kissing Minuet, and even, you know, he still had lipstick on his lips, and he wasn't surprised at all. He merely said, "Oh, am I interrupting?" But duh.
I've said it before, I will say it again, and I'll probably say it in a future show. Riker is a tart.
Yes.
Picard clearly knows this and is not surprised by the fact that he's got his tongue down a projected female. So it's a thing. And in fact, you see that again right at the very end of the episode, literally in the last few lines of the episode.
Yeah.
That awareness that Picard has of, let's say, Riker's nature, is just commonplace. He's obviously expecting this,
mm-hmm.
So it doesn't bother him.
Yeah. On hearing the captain's name, Minuet speaks to him in what was supposed to be French. Oh my god, that was so painful to hear.
It was French, wasn't it?
It was not wrong. It was just.
Was it English translated to French rather than French?
It was not grammatically almost correct, but
okay.
Yeah, the way they said that. I mean, we already said that on when we reviewed the pilot of Picard when
Picard.
He spoke in French to Number One. Yeah, it's, well, at least they're trying, but. And I know that I'm not the intended audience, so that was just to have the French touch for the US audience. But yeah,
yeah.
I wonder how they did that in the French version. I don't know.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
Yeah.
They probably spoke in English.
Yeah, maybe they changed the dialogue. But and yes, of course, as soon as she speaks French, Picard asks her if she's from Paris, because everyone is from Paris in France.
Is from Paris, exactly.
Yeah, that's we know that. There's nothing
it's
else.
Je suis Parisienne.
Yeah. Minuet asks Picard to join them, and she praises him, telling him Riker is a credit to his captain. Picard is also highly impressed with the program, commenting how it adapted to speak French to him. And again, Picard is not surprised to interact with an almost sentient holo character. So I guess I'm gonna say that they think that it's the enhancement of the binars work, but it's hard to swallow.
It's possible that Picard was as impressed by the realism of it that he just accepted it as being part, like you say, part of those enhancements.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's proving that Riker is incredibly fickle when it comes to love. He falls in love at the drop of a hat. I'm not even going to start on the appropriateness of attempting to start a relationship with a virtual being.
Yeah.
We don't have enough time for me to go into that detail. But, yeah, it's wrong.
Yeah,
the short version is wrong. Wrong. A little bit of trivia for this scene.
Oh, I love.
I was going to save it to the end, but I think it's relevant, and it's actually quite interesting. Now, I mentioned earlier about the band clearly miming their musical parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought the same of Riker. But then it occurred to me that when he was playing the trombone with the rest of the crew, with the rest of the band, he seemed to be moving the slide the right way for the notes that he was apparently playing. I did some digging into this, and he is actually, Jonathan Frakes is actually a trombonist. He can play the trombone. So obviously he wasn't playing it, he was miming it, but he was clearly miming it to the actual music that was playing. And he has actually appeared on an album. There's a band called Fish who did an album called Hoist back in 1994, and he actually played trombone on that album.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So it's one of these classic ones you see in TV series across the board, not just in Star Trek. If you have someone who either is a regular character on or guests on a particular series, you'll often find they try and incorporate their skills and talents and hobbies into the character that they're playing.
Yeah.
I believe he plays trombone at least three or four more times during the course of The Next Generation.
Yes.
So it's a thing that he does. But he clearly enjoyed doing that scene for the music. Well, obviously for the woman, but for the musical side of things as well. He enjoyed that jam session.
Yes. Yes, very much. On the bridge, Wesley calls Data and tells him that there is a problem in engineering. The magnetic containment field that holds the antimatter is reporting difficulties. Data and LaForge rush down to engineering and learn that the containment field is deteriorating. A containment breach will destroy the ship. Data initiates a red alert while LaForge tries to determine the source of the problem, but he can't halt the collapse. They quickly learn that they have only 4 minutes until the antimatter is released. Unable to reach Picard, Data makes an emergency command decision and broadcasts an all-hands message ordering everyone on board to abandon ship. Now, please tell me that even though they didn't react, they did notice the voice of the computer has changed.
Yes. Okay, so I spotted that immediately because I have never heard a male computer voice on the Enterprise D.
No, yeah.
I have on earlier ones, but not on the Enterprise D. So, yes, I have a bit of trivia about that as well, but I'll save that to the end.
Okay. Because that was pretty obvious that it was not the same voice. But,
yes, but again, the Bynar are doing things to the Enterprise. They might have upgraded the voice.
Well, that's not an upgrade. I would consider that a downgrade.
Maybe.
Right, so we're in Act 3.
No, we're not. I have a question.
Oh, okay.
If they are suffering a containment breach, why are they abandoning the ship? Why don't they just detach the saucer and jettison the whatever the rear section's called, I've forgotten. The bit that's got the warp drive on.
Yes.
Yeah, why don't they detach the saucer? Get everybody on the saucer section, detach it, and get the hell out of there.
Because they were docked, and it would take a long time to separate the saucer from the drive section.
My response to that would be, but that's exactly what they did in Generations. They had 5 minutes. They evacuated everyone to the saucer, detached it, and then got out of there.
I have a response for you.
Oh, please.
It was the first time that happened, so they didn't have a procedure for that. But between this episode and Generation, someone wrote a procedure to how to separate the saucer section from the drive section while the ship is docked. Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay. I'll let you have that, but only because I don't have a response.
Yeah, okay. So we're in Act 3 then.
Actually, I've got another question.
Oh, okay. So we're not in Act 3.
It's my understanding you should never abandon a starship.
Yeah.
Because if a ship is about to go kabloomy... Oh, actually, no, I've just answered my own question, haven't I?
Yeah.
I was saying that they would have to set auto-destruct, but obviously it seems as though they don't need to.
It was kind of an auto-destruct.
No, it's still relevant because auto-destruct is ship-wide.
Yes.
It sets off charges around the entire ship, whereas the only thing that's going to go up at this stage is the core, the antimatter.
Yes, but...
So what could end up happening is it explodes and bits of ship go flying off in different directions, which remain undestroyed.
It is my understanding that a warp core, detonating due to a breach in the antimatter containment field is a pretty big explosion.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think there would be anything left of the ship if that happened.
I stand corrected then.
Well, I might be very wrong.
I've never been on a ship during a warp core breach, so I would never know.
Me neither.
Probably good job, actually.
Yeah. So for the third time, we are in Act 3, unless you have a fourth question. Instructions are broadcasted through the ship, instructing people to appropriate transporter rooms for beam-off to the starbase. Wes is amongst the first to leave this way, with some children. Others leave via the gangway. The commotion attracts Yar and Worf at the starbase, and they are quickly filled in. On the bridge, Data and LaForge set the autopilot to put the maximum distance possible between the Enterprise and any inhabited area. Though the computer reports that they are the last two aboard, Data is concerned for Picard since, as captain, he is usually the last to leave, but there is no time to search for him. Now, they had 41 seconds, and they kind of took their time to go to the turbo lift, knowing that there's still the turbo lift. It takes time to go from the bridge to whatever transporter room they were going, and then beam out. So they didn't seem really in a hurry for 41 seconds. And also, why did they choose 41 and not 47? That would have been...
I missed the 41 seconds bit.
Yeah.
Well, the 47, why they didn't mention 47 is because 47 didn't come in until season 4, as I mentioned last week.
Still, yeah. It would have been very cool. It seems a lot simpler to leave a starbase than to dock to it, because docking seemed to be, the Riker was giving very specific orders and they were very careful and so on. You just have to put the ship in autopilot and it will leave the dock by itself.
So why don't they do that anyway?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, not sure. But if they only had 41 seconds, how would they get clear of space docking that time?
That's a good question. That's a very good question.
First one of the episode, that's not bad, is it?
We know that you can... make a ship leave docks with only 5% from Star Trek.
The search for Spock.
The search for Spock.
Number 3. So that was
Uhura.
There was 4.
4.
No, Uhura wasn't there.
No.
No, she was the one that helped them steal the Enterprise in the first place. She was still on whatever base they were on.
Yes.
With Mr. Adventure. So there was Kirk, there was McCoy, there was...
Sulu.
Yes, there was Sulu, and there was Scotty, so 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we now know that you can do that on autopilot. But again, maybe between the time of Star Trek 3 and... Star Trek 3 was after the first season of Next Gen?
That is a very good question. Let me find that out.
We need the jingle for the live search of the episode.
Live search of the episode.
1984.
Oh, you beat me.
Yeah, so that was before.
So before, yes.
So...
Well, Generations was 1994, and it was quite some time. So it's possible that all of the original series films, even up to 6, were done before next gen was released.
It is possible.
Why was Wesley one of the first ones off the ship? I would have expected that with him being bridge crew, he would have been one of the last.
Well, one of two reasons. Pick the one you prefer. One is a coward. Two, he was in charge of evacuating the children.
I thought you were going to say something else. Oh. That he was a child himself.
Yes, that too. But I think that he's him being an acting ensign supersedes the fact that he's a child.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah. The other question I've got, and this is a kind of a lead into the rest of the episode, actually, is why didn't the holodeck announce that there was a red alert?
Yes.
So I came up with two theories at this point. Obviously not knowing what was coming up. The first one was that the holodeck was hijacked, mm-hmm. which actually, even at this point, makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
And Minuet was more than just a character.
Yeah.
She was acting as some form of decoy.
Well, both theories are actually correct.
Yeah, well, we don't know that at this point, but as I was watching it, that was the conclusion I came to.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you say, it turned out to be correct, but lots of things appeared wrong.
Yeah.
But actually, they made perfect sense.
Absolutely. Jordi and Data beam onto the Starbase. I was going to say the database, but it's a Starbase. And are told by Yar, Worf, and Dr. Crusher, who had been on the Starbase since before the emergency, that Picard and Riker aren't there either. Data wants to return for him, but there's no time. As the Enterprise starts to move out of the Starbase, the magnetic field suddenly restores itself. The ship, no longer in danger, clears the Starbase and jumps to warp.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Now we know there is something strange.
Yes, because every search they did for Piker and Rickard, wow, for Picard and Riker, yielded nothing. Nope. So the Enterprise couldn't locate them. The Starbase couldn't locate them. For all intents and purposes, they had disappeared. They thought the Enterprise was empty.
Yes. Picard and Riker, unknowing of what has been going on this entire time, are still in the holodeck, amazed at how intuitive the program is. When Picard tries to leave, however, Minuet becomes nervous and goes to great lengths to make him stay. He gets suspicious and orders the holodeck exit to show. Upon the emergence of the holodeck arch and the opening of the doors, he and Riker discover the red alert, learning there is no one on the bridge. So now the computer remembers about Picard and Riker not being evacuated. That's weird.
And that was from the holodeck. That was from the Arch computer as well.
Yeah.
So it's obviously capable of responding to requests from Picard and Riker. So why didn't it say what was going on before then?
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird. Picard consults the computer and learns the details of the situation. They come to a conclusion: the Bynars have stolen the Enterprise for some reason. They question Minuet, who tells them she was programmed by the Bynars to keep Riker busy. Picard's presence was just a lucky coincidence. She is not able to tell them what the Bynars want with the ship. So she had some of the answers, but not all the answers. She was indeed programmed by the Bynars, but they didn't put all the information.
But why did they program her with any of the information?
Yeah. As you said, everything that that we said before starts to make sense except for that. Why would they just not give her all the information? I don't know.
This is like that scene when you're watching, you know, like a spy movie, James Bond or whatever, and you get to that point in the movie when the hero is about to be killed. But before that happens, the baddie decides to tell the hero everything doing. They go through
every
the entire
time.
Plan. It's like that.
Every time.
Yeah.
every single time. Yes.
And it's daft.
Yeah, but that's in the spy movie for the dummies. How to write a spy movie for the dummies.
Yes.
It's in there. You have to do that.
I mean, part of it's narcissism, isn't it? This is how wonderful I am. I'm such a brilliant, evil master genius. I have to tell you what my plan is.
Yes.
Because you're not going to escape, are you?
Of course not. You're the hero. You're going to die now.
Yeah.
On Starbase 74, Data asks what the nearest starship is. When he learns it's the Trieste, he dismisses it as too small and too slow, to which Commander Quinteros replies that even if it is the ship closest to the Starbase, it is still too far away. Data then notices that the binary are missing and deduces that they stole the ship. Yeah, clever, Data. He also guesses their most likely course, the homeworld Binos. Yeah, that I thought that was... It's logical, but it was a little bit rushed to this conclusion. Say, oh, they stole the ship, so they're going to their homeworld.
Yeah.
I mean, could be any reason why they did that, so...
You're talking about a 40 to 45 minute episode, aren't
you? Yes.
You have to squeeze these things in.
It's just a creative shortcut.
Yeah, which they could have done over two episodes if they were doing multi-episode storylines.
Yeah, but...
This would have been good over two episodes.
Ooh, yes. Back on the Enterprise, Picard and Riker enter the weapons room to obtain phasers. It is now up to them to retake the ship. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, Picard access. Is that the password to get in? Because it's a very tiny password. It's not very secure. I mean, Wes could have, guessed that uses his Picard box to open the door.
Yeah, probably.
Picard access is really not a secure password.
It kind of happens a bit later on as well.
Mm-hmm. So we're in Act 4. Picard and Riker have a momentary disagreement about the course of action, but Riker eventually follows Picard to main engineering. Facing an unknown opposition, they must assume the worst. So they activate the one function of the ship that requires both of them to consent, the auto-destruct sequence. Riker is a bit reluctant, since they will only have 5 minutes once the auto-destruct is activated, but should they retake the ship, they can stop the countdown at the bridge.
On a crappy red LED dot matrix display.
Oh, yes. this was awful. It was out of place. I mean, it was there in the corner.
It is so wrong. Just if you look at how everything else is laid out, everything's on like proper flat screen displays, computer generated, blah, blah. Yeah. Well, most of them aren't. They're backlit templates. But it just looks so wrong.
I think they just put that together in 5 minutes and say okay, yeah. That's gonna be good enough.
Yeah,
no, which probably was at the time. It's at the time we had alarm clocks that looked like that. So it's probably just an alarm clock. Anyway.
It probably is. Yeah, like a digital timer or something.
Mm-hmm. As they leave, Picard notices that huge amounts of information are being stored in the ship's computer. Finding that the access to the turbo lift is blocked, they decide to use the transporter room. Now they spend an awful lot of time discussing how they will get on the bridge, given that once again they probably have to run to the nearest transporter room and then beam . The way this was discussed, I mean, Riker suggests that he could beam on the bridge. Picard said, no, it's going to be too long. So let's beam the two of us. And I don't know if he was expecting the binar to shoot one of them. I think that's what he meant when he said, hopefully one of us will be a diversion. But yeah, okay. I thought, beaming in the turbo lift was a much better idea.
Not if it... Because Riker originally said he would beam into the turbo lift and then force the door open.
Yeah.
But that's going to take time. time during which it will alert them to his location. I think they probably have a better opportunity of beaming in directly to the bridge at the same time, sorry, spoiler, to get the element of surprise.
Well, they could have made the best of both solution, that beam one in the turbo lift and make a lot of noise to get the attention of the binars, and then beam another one in a corner.
That's a clever idea.
I know. That's what I do. I have one every week. That's tonight.
But I thought that his Riker's plan was flawed by one assumption, which was, in order to do the whole beaming directly into a turbo lift and then forcing your way out of it, the turbo lift would have had to have been at bridge level to start with.
That's a good remark, yes.
And it will, we have no way of knowing. Otherwise, they'll materialize in the middle of a lift shaft.
Bum.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Nope.
a quick note about the something Picard said earlier. He, as they were leaving the bridge, they said that. Sorry, Picard said he noticed there was huge amounts of information being stored in the ship's computer from a screen that was just full of circles and dashes.
Yes.
How on earth can he deduce that from that?
It's good. That's why.
Clearly.
The captain.
Okay, he probably can read the Matrix.
Yes. That's what I wrote in my show notes. I said, Picard should be called Neo.
Yes, it happens later on as well, actually.
Yeah. LaForge tells the other that there is no response from the Enterprise, and Worf states that someone else must be in control of the ship. Data blames himself for what happened, claiming that he was negligent of his duty since he doesn't require rest or recreation and thus, theoretically, can be on duty constantly. But the others console him by saying that the incident could have occurred even if he was present on the bridge. The ship nearest to readiness in the starbase is the USS Melbourne, but it's still 18 hours from being ready.
In that scene, Commander Quinteros was saying about which ships in the starbase were ready. But I noticed that what his lips were saying is not what we were hearing.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. Not only that, I was listening with headphones on, and I noticed that after the bit where his lips were moving but weren't saying what we were hearing, the audio atmosphere changed. As we started hearing what he was saying. So there was clearly an overdub there of a particular piece of dialogue. And I can't for the life of me work out what he was supposed to say before they dubbed it.
Okay. So if someone can read lips, please send us your take on what he was saying.
Yeah. It was the 18 hours bit that he was that we heard him say, but wasn't what he said. Okay.
What was I?
Using a time delay.
Using a time delay, Picard and Riker both beam onto the bridge at the same time and in different locations in order to give themselves a better chance of retaking the ship should they meet resistance. Upon arriving, they find the four binars collapsed near the entrance of the observation lounge. Two of them ask for help before they pass out. So we now know that there are two ports on the bridge because Picard said I don't remember aft port and left port and right port. I don't know how we said that. Although they materialize nowhere near any port. And we also learned that you can beam two persons at two different places in one go.
I had no idea.
I had no idea either.
I didn't even know that was possible.
And I'm not sure we ever see that again after.
As far as I was aware, when you did a transport, you kind of landed in the same configuration that you were when you were stood on the pads. Yeah. But the fact that you can selectively choose which pads are active. Because if you do a... Oh, hang on. No, you wouldn't know that, would you? Because the disintegration of matter you wouldn't see on a pad that wasn't occupied. But I suppose it's possible.
Apparently.
I don't know.
It's cool. It's a cool feature.
It is. It is. It's quite snazzy. But no, obviously I've not seen the majority of TNG. I've seen next to nothing of DS9 or Voyager. So I don't know where this has been done before. But in the films and series that I have seen, I've never seen that action.
No, from memory, it's the only time that I've seen that.
Mm.
But maybe someone is going to correct us.
It was a cool idea.
Yeah. So we're in Act 5 now. With the bridge under their control again, Picard and Riker deactivate the autodestruct sequence and find that they're in orbit around Bynos. All the equipment on Bynos is inert, and no one is responding. They reason that they are probably dying like the ones on board. Another look at their computer shows it is completely packed with data, a core dump from the main computer on Bynos, but they can't access it. So, as you said earlier, just by looking at circles and dashes, yeah, they realize that there's that it's a memory dump of the planet.
One of them said every available byte is occupied by this file.
To get more information, they go back to Minuet, who tells them that a star in the Bynos system went supernova. The electromagnetic pulse was going to knock out the main computer, so the only option was to back up its content into the only mobile computer large enough, the computer aboard the Enterprise. However, the star went supernova sooner than expected, and the Enterprise arrived later than expected at the starbase, leaving them no time for consultation and forcing them to resort to the desperate action. Riker and Picard must now restore the computer before it's too late, but not even Minuet knows the means to access it.
Mm.
So yeah, it's one huge file, and the only thing that that you need to access it is a file name, and with that you can decrypt the whole thing.
Yeah, so if the file name... Well, we haven't got to that bit yet.
No.
Why is Minuet suddenly acting like a robot?
I don't know.
Her character, her charisma is just completely and totally gone.
Yeah.
She's got no emotion, no feeling whatsoever.
Maybe because the computer on the planet has collapsed. I don't know. Maybe it's linked somehow to the Bynos.
But they said the computer was offline.
Yeah. So maybe there's a part of her that needs the Bynos or the computer from the Bynos. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Oh, okay. I've just had a thought.
Ooh.
Careful now.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if Minuet was actually being guided by one of the Bynar, two of the Bynar.
Yeah, probably.
And that's why she knew everything about the plan.
That's a good explanation, yes.
But now she's saying, I don't know much about the plan. She can't answer certain questions, and she's lost a lot of her characterization that we've seen so far in her interactions with Riker, because the Bynar have collapsed.
Yes, and that can explain the end of the episode too.
Yes.
That's very good. That's a very good observation, yes.
Unfortunately, we never get an answer to it.
No, but I'll keep this one in mind for the next time I watch this episode.
Hmm.
Picard and Riker return to the bridge, where Picard contacts Data. Data tells him that the Bynars would want them to access the stored file, which would be called something simple. Based on the Bynars' way of thinking, the most likely name is an 8 or 16 character binary string. What? Why 8 or 16?
Not a clue.
3 or 47?
Well, binary strings usually come in multiples of 8.
just because we have octets and bytes.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it could be a sixth, a half byte.
Yeah,
it
could be.
Just yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. It fits the storyline.
Yes. Racker runs some 8-bit possibilities, and they find the file is called 11001001, hence the title of this episode. And I mean, he only had to run 256 combination.
Incorrect. He had 65,536 to go through, because data said he had it was an 8 or 16 character binary string.
True. But using the most powerful computer of the Federation or Starfleet, I mean, that's...
That would have taken milliseconds.
Piece of cake. They both have to work together, as the Binars do, to access the information. The Binars computer reboots, and the Binars awaken. And that's when I wrote in my show notes that Picard should be called Neo, as he was reading that that screen as if it was clear. I'm sure it was making things up, just to show off in front of Riker.
Look, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when you just stab the keys on a computer keyboard and suddenly it does what you want it to do. Oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, okay. I pressed the space bar and it wrote a space in my document.
Wow. I didn't expect that to happen.
Well, from the location, it seemed that they were on Science Station 2 anyway, so they could do pretty much everything from there.
Picard was.
Yeah, Picard was.
Riker was on Science Station 1.
Yeah, which...
That's it.
Loser.
That is it.
Yeah.
That's why Picard's the captain and Riker is not.
Absolutely. The Binars tell Picard that they didn't ask for help because they were afraid they might say no. Their situation was too desperate to gamble on such an uncertainty. They trapped Riker because they thought they might need someone to restore the computer for them. And he did.
That logic kind of falls down because we already knew they needed two.
Yes.
The Binars should have known that. So it wasn't that they trapped Riker. They would have had to have trapped Riker and someone else.
Yes, that's true. I didn't think of that.
I can't claim credit for that. It was in the review notes.
Oh.
Oh, I should have kept quiet.
Given that everything is in order and he got his ship back, Picard settles the matter. He then takes the helm and then returns to Starbase 74. Well, the docking sequence at the beginning of the episode, as I already mentioned, seemed to be a big deal with everyone working and others. But apparently you just need two people to dock the ship. So I don't know why they make a big fuss about it at the beginning.
Now, that is interesting because... I can't remember which film it was. It might have been The Voyage Home. When they got back... No, it can't have been, because they were in a Klingon Bird of Prey, weren't they? It was in one of the films of the original series when they came back with a phenomenally dented and battered Enterprise. The Enterprise was guided in by computer. It was guided in by Starfleet. Mm-hmm. When they got close enough. So the docking procedure was actually carried out, not by the crew.
Which I would understand and almost expect from a Starbase to, tractor beam to use a tractor beam
essentially,
and bring
the
ship in. Yeah. As a pilot ship would help a big cargo to enter.
Right. Yes, exactly so. Exactly so. But that in the universe chronology, that was before this.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of docking, going through the process of the crew docking with the Starbase was probably pointless.
Yeah. And it's risky. I mean, you just make a mistake and you can destroy the Starbase.
Well, you could do. Unlikely, but you could certainly cause it some fairly serious damage.
Yes. The crew comes on board and the Binars are led off to face a hearing. Riker returns to the holodeck, but the minuet he knew is gone. In her place is another brunette, similar looking to his, but nowhere near as perfect. Disappointed, he returns to the bridge. Picard suspects that maybe it was part of the Bynars programming, stating, however, that some relationships just can't work. Riker sighs, admitting that she will be very difficult to forget. Cue the violin.
What was he expecting? Seriously. Yeah, I mean,
it's a hollow character. I mean,
exactly.
Just a power outage and she's gone.
Surely he could recreate her at some point.
Probably the physical appearance, but the programming, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. If she was being guided and driven by Bynar brains or computers, then yeah, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not, no.
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought it was a good episode. It was it's one of those ones you know that are that I watch I like watching when I just stumble upon them. Yeah, the story was interesting. There are some minor things, and that's as you said last week. That's because we're picky and we're looking for those things. But yeah, altogether a good episode, I thought.
I totally agree. I think the storyline was great. The whole concept and the execution of it was pretty much okay. I probably enjoyed it more for the fact that I was able to pick huge numbers of holes in it. But again, that's me. That's us. It's what we do. If you take away the small, insignificant things that we always tend to pick out in these episodes and put them to one side, this was actually a really great episode.
Yeah, yeah. Not the same story as usual. It's I liked it. It was a nice change of scenery. Not scenery because it's on the ship, but nice change of kind of story.
Yes. I'll tell you who else liked this episode.
Who?
Jonathan Frakes.
Oh.
He said that for him, this was one of the highlights of the first season.
And it's probably right.
Mm. I have a quote if you want to hear it.
Yes, go ahead.
He said, "A fabulous show. These were the kind of chances we took first season, that when they worked great. It was a very chancy show and I loved it. Those characters, the Bynars, why haven't they returned? That was a very well-conceived idea. They should have them as a regular on the ship to fix the engines or whatever the hell they do."
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, yeah. If one of the key actors says, "That was a really good episode, I enjoyed making it," it was probably a good episode.
Yeah, yeah. Same way as when they said Jonathan Frakes and Oliver Button said that The Naked Now was probably the worst episode ever. I can understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the subject of self-sentient hollow characters, in Deep Space Nine, there is one such character, and he's a singer, a 1920s singer in a casino or something like that. And he's self-aware. He's aware that he's a hologram. He's aware that he's on a ship, and he's interacting. It's kind of a kind of like of Troy, you know, a counselor, and people come and talk to him. You know, him being a holo program is easier maybe than talking to a human. So it's she's not the only one. Minuet is not the only one holo character that is actually aware of what she is.
No, absolutely. I suppose not.
Well, we could also argue that the Doctor is a sentient hologram. He knows that he's an hologram.
But he has a functional purpose, whereas the characters in the hologram, they're purely for entertainment.
Yes.
So there's no necessity for them to understand the true meaning of their basis. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the Doctor, he needs to know who he is, what he can do, what his limits are, and he needs to be able to provide that feedback back into the system of Voyager.
Yes, yes. True. Not exactly the same, though.
Mm. Well, I have some trivia for this episode.
You said you have something to add at the end of the review, so
I've started doing this now. I've started making notes of trivia that I'm I mean, there is a huge amount of trivia on the review notes on the Memory Alpha article, but I'm just picking out the ones that are relevant. There's about three pages of them on the website. This episode was the first of only three occasions in the entire TNG series where Picard takes the con.
Oh, okay.
The other times were in Booby Trap, which was a series three episode, and Conundrum, which I think was season five.
Okay.
Only three times he actually takes the helm, which makes sense. You wouldn't expect him to.
No, he's the captain.
Yeah, exactly. We've already pointed out the male computer voice, but this was actually the first episode in which Majel Barrett supplied the voice of the computer in TNG.
What? She was not her voice before?
Nope. Apparently not. Ah,
okay.
I know. I thought I'd heard her prior to this one, but clearly not. Now, the male voice.
Yeah.
The male voice is listed as unidentified. However, we have heard that voice before.
It's Argyle.
No. We don't know who it is.
Oh, okay.
The person is uncredited.
We have heard that same unidentified
voice. We have heard that same unidentified voice before.
Okay.
Uttering the words, last time on Encounter at Farpoint. So the person who did the recap at the beginning of episode 2 is the same person that provided the male voice for the computer in this episode.
I wouldn't call that a recap, just saying last time on Encounter at Farpoint.
No. But, you know, last time, that's six words. It's a start.
Good for you, unidentified character. Your voice is now very well known.
Feel free to take credit for something you have not been given credit for. Now, I mentioned earlier that I had some trivia about the repairs to the holodeck.
Yes.
Now, this is really quite interesting because it does highlight something that we mentioned 2 weeks ago, I think, with a big goodbye. This episode was originally intended to be filmed and aired before the big goodbye. So the holodeck malfunction that trapped some of the crew in, I can't remember his name now, in Matey's office,
mm-hmm.
was going to be explained as being caused by the binars malfunction. So there was the Haradan probe.
Yeah.
So that was going to be explained by what the binars did.
Okay.
But in this episode, the binars made reference to the probe which caused problems in the holodeck. So this episode, it actually referred to what happened in the big goodbye.
Oh.
So whichever way round it was going to be, it was either going to be explained that the problems in the big goodbye caused the holodeck issues in 110101111111, the work the binars did in this episode were going to be the cause of the malfunction in the big goodbye, whichever way round that episode was going to be.
Cool. So it's a first bit of serialization on this series. We are in this episode, they refer to something that happened on the previous episode.
Actually, something else happened in this episode that was exactly the same, and that was when Picard was describing the holodeck to Minuet when he first went in after Riker had his tongue down Minuet's throat. he made references to the woodlands, which is from Encounter at Farpoint, the ski slopes, which is from last week's Angel One.
Oh, yes.
Figures That Fight, which was Code of Honor. The I think that was the one where Yar was demonstrating martial arts.
Exactly.
And what he called fictional characters with whom we can interact, which is the big goodbye.
Okay, yeah. So they were actually putting some bits of serialization in there.
Absolutely, yeah. It's nice to see that they are starting to reference the stuff that has happened in the past.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the fact that they are not necessarily airing these in the order in which they were produced, there is a danger there that they could be referencing something that hasn't happened yet.
Yes. Understand that, yeah. That would be weird.
The episode title.
Yes.
Why?
The name of the file.
Yeah, why though?
Don't know.
The only thing that I can come up to, and I think there is a suggestion. Yes, there is. There is a suggestion here in the review notes. The first two binars we met were 10 and 01, which are binary numbers 1 and 2. The second pair of binars, which we didn't know their names, could have been 11 and 00.
Yep.
So if you combine those together, that gives you that string of bits.
Yes, okay, that's a reasonable explanation. I can live with that.
The working title for the episode was 0101. No, it wasn't. 10101001.
Oh. That wouldn't have made any sense.
No. None whatsoever. Oh well.
Yeah, oh well.
End of trivia.
End of trivia and end of review, I guess. Unless you have something else to add.
No.
All right.
No,
so that's the end of our review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 15, 11001001. So, yes, as we said in the opening of this episode, Dave is looking for a co-host. So we're going to give you all the information in a moment to contact us. Thanks to everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. We really appreciate you spending a little bit of your precious time to listen to our show. You can help us spread the love for our show by setting off a few thousand eco-friendly helium balloons, each of which has one of the letters of our web address on it. So, if they go by in exactly the right order, they'll spell out tlgreyhot.org. Or if you feel that the likelihood of that is as low as me becoming the president of the Swiss Confederation, you can simply share our website on social media. Yeah, that chances are pretty slim.
I'm so sorry, I did make that rather complex.
No, that's okay.
You're lucky, I've got to think of the next 2 weeks worth of one as well.
Yeah.
You can find our website over at tlgreyhot.org, where you can find all of the show notes of the 48 episodes. I don't know how many we've done now.
Yeah.
That we've done so far, the reviews that we have derived for these episodes, and of course you can leave a comment on the bottom of every one of our show notes.
You can also send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org, or you can actually put whatever you want at tlgreyhot.org. It should arrive. We read absolutely everything we get. We love reading your feedback. And unless you state otherwise, we might read that on the show.
We are on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those is TEGH Podcast. And you can also find us on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast. That is the only place you'll get the link to our unlisted YouTube live streams. You can watch us as we make a complete and utter fool of ourselves trying to get through the things that we've written but can't read.
Yeah, which is hilarious at times.
Very much so.
Thank you to Lenny, our communications officer, and also thank you to Memory Alpha. As always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network, where you will find all of our shows and our phenomenal hosts.
Indeed so. Next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 16, Too Short a Season. We'll be joined by my lovely wife, Caroline, who will be co-hosting the show with me. Because, as we've already said, Yannick is taking two very much deserved weeks off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad Caroline will be there. At least there will be someone, you know.
What, you trust?
Yes, someone I trust.
Yes.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you, Dave. It was a pleasure reviewing this episode with you.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was really good to go through. Thank you.
Yeah, and a good episode with that. So that's always good to review good episodes.
It helps.
Yes. I will not be back next week, but Dave will be with Caroline. So join us in our Telegram group to get the link and see them both record this episode live. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya. Trois, deux, un.
Engage.
I didn't know what French for engage was. That's life.
That's life. That's what all the people say. Make a note, because last time you said you were going to talk about something at the end of the episode, it got lost. Since the disaster at Micromius? Well, no, because Star Trek 3. Back on the Enterprise, Piker and Riker.
It's not just me.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.